Yeah, my only hope was Betty Lou. She was the one. A combination AK-57 Uzi Raider laser triple barrel double scoped heat-seeking shotgun.
Are you going to agree? Our freedoms are waning and we'll lose our liberty. Slipping one by one until there's nothing left to see. Are you willing to stand with me? Are you just going to let it be? The ranchers are first, but brother, next it may be me. We all stand together or we'll hang separately. Are you going to the tree? Are you willing to be free? It won't get any easier to regain lost liberty. Strange things are happening in this land that once was free. So, brother, I ask you, are you going to stand by me?
Welcome to the Shooting Bench. For the next hour, I'll be bringing you commentary and important updates on current events, as well as information on guns, training, preparedness, and other liberty-related issues. Let's get started. RAT, right now.
I'll go eat.
Welcome. Here we are. It is the 18th of April. Welcome to the Shooting Bench. And, that was funny. Yeah, we're just having a ball here tonight. Anyway. Coming up here on the... I've got a good story for you here in just a second, but I've got to get a couple of other things out of the way. Coming up on the 6th and 7th of May is our designated rifleman class, and it is starting to fill, so if you're interested in taking that class, well, give us a holler. And if you go on the website and put in the code that is offered there, you get a $55 off of that class. So, and then we've got, what do we got? A concealed carry class coming up next weekend, and a few other odds and ends of things. And then we've got some private training going on up on the Arizona Strip at the end of the month. And we're looking at possibly doing maybe a couple of back-to-back classes down in Tucson middle of next month. So we've got a lot of stuff going on. This first story right here, I want to get this out of the way, and then I got some other stuff to talk about because I want Amy to hear this. Stand by a minute. All right. This is a neat story. The direct descendants of early Mormon church leader Brigham Young are going to put his personal Colt revolver up for sale as the flagship item at an Illinois firearms auction held at the end of the month. Estimated to sell, take a guess. What do you think? This
$2 million.
This is a Colt single action army.
$2 million.
Probably won't get quite that much. They're estimating between $550,000 and $850,000.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it does seem a little on the light side, mm-hmm. Considering it's engraved on the back, presented to Governor Young by. I can't read the It's H.E. Dimmick, owner of the company, I guess, who was the dealer. It's definitely, you know, for that kind of money, it seems, I don't know, if I had that in my family, if that was with that kind of history, I think I'd have a hard time parting with it. That seems a little, I don't know, I guess everybody's different. Has direct ties to the settling of the West and the early Mormon church. Frankly, we're fortunate this piece isn't already housed in a museum. It's an unrivaled opportunity to own a newly discovered national treasure. So talks about a little bit about Brigham Young's history. The revolver is personally inscribed to Young from his, and was presented to him with what was then the largest firearms dealer west of the Mississippi. That guy I told you about, H.E. Dimmick. It comes to Rock Island Auction from the direct descendants of Brigham Young and is accompanied with an unimpeachable letter of provenance of Young's great-grandson. The gun is certain to endear itself to collectors with its high condition and engraving executed by Gustave Young, the most prominent 19th century firearms engraver, but the combination of those factors and his historic ironclad provenance is what earns this small revolver its hefty estimate. So there you go. Other historic items in the sale include a Winchester rifle presented to the man who captured Geronimo, a Colt revolver belonging to a pioneering Texas cattle baron, several revolvers decorated by Tiffany and Company, and a uniform attributed to the War of 1812 hero Commodore Perry. That ought to bring a pretty penny. So, anyway, there you go. Thought that was kind of interesting. I'll tell you what else was kind of interesting. We were speaking of Tucson. We had a trip down there, had a little chore to go take care of over the weekend. Actually, it wasn't on the weekend. When was it? Wednesday. And went down there, and it was... I think I already told you about it on the trip Wednesday. It was the one Friday that I haven't told you about. We came back Thursday morning and got our, you know, messed around here and got some dry practice kits taken care of and a few odds and ends of things. And then we had another rally to go to Friday night. Well, I'll tell you, the rally was a complete and utter absolute flop. Bless his heart, the guy that was putting on, I know he felt bad. It wasn't his fault. Phoenix is just a hard place. You know, most of the rallies, the only one we've seen down there that really had good participation was the one that John Ritzheimer put on when he did the protest and the Muslim thing down there. And it had a good turnout, but all the rest of them, I've never seen one down there that was very exciting. I went down there to one, spoke one time, there was only, there might have been 300 people there, but, you know, people say, 300? Well, that's not a bad turnout. Yes, it is a bad turnout. It's a very bad turnout. When you have a town the size of Phoenix, where for all practical purposes Maricopa County is Phoenix, and you're looking at 4 million people. Out of those 4 million people, about 3 million and 3.5 million of them are at least semi-conservative. Some of them staunchly conservative. A lot of them. And we had 300 people show up, nice summer afternoon, lots of shade. Nice place, lawn out there. Wasn't like it was out in the middle of the desert or something. It was downtown, and it was a great deal. So, you know, this kind of goes along with what we were talking about one day last week about people that want to sit around and bang on their computer keyboards and say, "Oh yeah, we're patriots. We're going to do this. We're going to do that." But you don't ever see them. You know, they're there. they're sure on Facebook, by golly. They're putting lots of stuff out on Facebook. We're gonna do this. We're gonna take our country over. What are you gonna do it? You gonna do it with a Facebook post? You gonna address it to BLM or to Obama and say, okay, we're taking our country back. Signed, me. Okay, it's done. Let's go to Starbucks. I don't get it. But anyway, that wasn't the Long Slide said they had to mow the lawn on Saturday, huh? That's right. All right. Well, let's talk about how we got down there. Took one of my guys with me from here. And last little while, I've noticed that my truck was skipping a little bit. It's sucking a little bit of air. So every once in a while, like when I went down to Tucson, I had to stop twice, pull it over, and it was running, but it was only running about, you know, I could just barely get like 50 miles an hour out of it. And so I'd find a wide spot, and I'd shut it down and bleed the air out of it and fire it back up, and it worked fine. It'd run good for a little while. And anyway, we was headed down a different direction now, going down to Phoenix, and got about, I don't know, 25 miles out of Payson, and going down the mountain, and I noticed it was sucking air again and wasn't running right. So I pulled it over. I went out there to bleed it again, and the little plastic bleeder screw broke. And then come to find out when I examined it when it got done, that's where it had been sucking air also. So it was unfortunate that it happened the way it did, but at least I found out what the problem was. So we thinking, well, what are we going to do now? Here we are, you know, 20 miles in the middle of nowhere, and we're going to be late. We might as well call them and tell them we're not going to make it to our event. Luckily, we had a couple of backups down there to take care of what we needed to go down there for. And I said, well, let's between me and the guy that was with me there, we kind of dug around through there, and this bleeder screw is hollow in the middle, so basically the top come off of it and left the other piece down in the hole in the top of the fuel filter. So I managed to get a little small thin-bladed screwdriver and fish that out. And then we found a little metal, one of those little pointed roofing screws, and we Teflon taped it all up and stuck it in there and good and snug, and had to be careful not to split the plastic piece that was going back in there. And we Teflon taped the heck out of that, the other piece, and put it back in there. And believe it or not, actually, I was hoping it would just get us to Payson. And it run good. We didn't have any problem with it. So we got to Payson and went to Napa there. Do you have one of these screws? No, but we can have one here tomorrow. And I said, well, great. Well, go ahead and order me one. If I happen to make it back up here, I'll pick it up. So in the meantime, when we got down to Phoenix, after our event and everything was going, we went around. There's some all-night auto parts places down there, and some that close at 11 and midnight. And went to several places, and they all said it was a special order item. Couldn't get it. But the truck was still running. Actually, when we got done at the event, we went to fire it up, and it didn't start. So we took it out and re-Teflon'd everything and put it back together. And run like a top. Wasn't a bit of problem with it. So we made it about halfway back to Payson, pulled off out there in the desert and camped out and got up the next morning early and made it into Payson. And that guy had had the little screw for me, and I said, well, I'll just take it, and the truck was running like a top, and I didn't have any problem, so we just brought it on home, and I just fixed it. When did I fix it? Yesterday? Yeah, fixed it yesterday. So I actually made a little video of it just because it's on YouTube if you want to check it out, but It's not very a fancy video, just something I threw together just to show people, you know, there's ways to get around things when you don't have the right stuff to do it with. Sometimes you can piece things together and get her done. Talked about the, I think I've talked about it here on the show before. I think we've had a little short segment here one time about all the different things that you could do to you know, jerry-rig something together so that it would, so you could get back on the road. And that included, you know, everybody's used, in the older cars, use a 22 shell or for a fuse or an empty shell. Or, yes, Minnie, I do carry Teflon in my truck. Absolutely, I would not be without it. I used, let's see, a little piece. What I've done is, when I used to smoke and a fuse would blow and I didn't have one, I'd take the tinfoil off of the out of the cigarette package and wrap it around the old fuse and put it in there, and it would work just fine. I've used everything from I've used baling wire and pantyhose as fan belts. I fixed a fuel pump on a 66 Ford one time with a condom. I went into Valley Steakhouse or Valley whatever it was. Was it Valley? Village. The Village Steakhouse. Village Steakhouse in Gallup, New Mexico, in the middle of the night, you know, 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. And went in there and went to the bathroom and bought a condom and come back and fixed the fuel pump with it so I could get home. We made it 60 miles with my jury-rigged fuel pump. And, heck, I can't think of all the other thing. But Benny, you know, that's one of the things I've got. My truck has been absolutely the most reliable vehicle I've ever owned in my life. It's an awesome truck. And but I still carry a full set of tools. And like I said in this video, I put I've got nuts and bolts and screws and washers and tape and all kinds of odds and ends of stuff. And I do that just for this reason, because sometimes I can't have every single brand new part that I need to keep the truck running if something were to happen, or if I come up on somebody else, especially the older trucks or older vehicles. So sometimes you have to make do with what you got. So having electrical tape and Teflon tape, and so it doesn't take up a whole lot of room, but I've got a whole set of all that stuff in my truck just for that reason. And that's the reason that I'm not still walking between where I broke down and Payson. And I've done this, I can't tell you how many times I've had to rig something up like that just to get home. It's just a way of life, I guess, when you raised as poor as I was and you couldn't just go down and get parts. Sometimes I had to rig things up just to wait, just run it between paydays. So that's all I got to say about that. So I'll be back here in just a second.
Hunger for you. be back.
Complaining, it has taught me how to stand and fight for what I believe in. I guess that's just how I was raised.
I've got a couple of diametrically opposed individuals here in their beliefs. The first one, now you know about this guy. We've talked about him many times. That's Toby Keith. He's an Obama supporter. He's anti-gun. Was it Toby Keith that had the restaurants that have the no guns? Anyway. He's an Obama supporter. That's enough for me. And believe it or not, this blows me plumb out of the water. Why do we have noise going on in my show? Oh, I see. It's because this guy's coming to speak. We're going to let him speak to you here in a minute. This is absolutely amazing. On May 21st, the NRA is presenting Toby Keith and a special guest Chris Jansen on Saturday, May 21st at the KFC Yum Center, whatever in the hell that is. Saturday night celebration tickets on sale now. The NRA annual meetings and exhibits Facebook page announced Thursday. National Rifle Association presents Toby. Unbelievable. Keith last headlined the Association's entertainment program in Orlando in 2003. Understandably, especially with the recent manufactured furor over the upcoming gun-free RNC convention, initial comments are asking if the NRA concert will be in a gun-free venue. Online resource leave room for uncertainty. Well, I tell you, the NRA has never been very one to for all the banquets and stuff that I've been to, the friends of the NRA and stuff like that. They've never really gone out of their way to make sure that that was the first thing on the list, just to make sure that their venue is gun-friendly. It may or may not be. It depends on who is open. They don't say, well, if we can't carry our guns in there, then we ain't going. I've been to some that were and some that were not, depending on what they could find. Wide Open Spaces reports NRA will allow concealed guns at the annual meetings in Kentucky, but appears to walk that back a bit when referencing the concert by citing official policy and providing a general link to the annual meeting website. Likewise, the KFC Yum Center guest services page is not definitive. Firearms. During University of Louisville events, no firearms are permitted inside the venue. During all other events, firearms may be restricted at the discretion of the individual promoter. To find a gun policy, and it gives you a phone number to call there. But I understand also, sometimes there's just not another choice. Sometimes it's an insurance issue. And there's just nothing you can do, regardless of who you are. It may not matter at all where you hold the event. It may not matter, period, what their policy is. It may be only that the insurance will not allow it. So, it is Toby Keith. Carrying firearms also been reported prohibited at Toby Keith's restaurants a few years back. Fox 5 reported an outlet in Virginia with a prominent no gun sign and the I Love This Bar and Grill brand notwithstanding, perhaps contributed to why so many locations have been abruptly closed. That's funny. Even more curiously, Keith had admitted voting for Bill Clinton twice, meaning he voted for him after the 1994 assault weapons ban. And while some may say his subsequent votes for George Bush indicated a change of heart, it hardly explains his political actions after that. Because 5 years after Keith wowed NRA members in Orlando, he declared himself a supporter of the man that NRA Wayne LaPierre called the most anti-gun president ever to occupy the Oval Office. Toby Keith praised Barack Obama, calling him the best Democratic candidate we've had since Bill Clinton. Actually, he's been the only Democratic candidate we've had since Bill Clinton. No, I guess not the only one. The only president since Bill Clinton. And that's coming from a Democrat. Keith went on to honor Obama by performing at his 2009. So anyway, that's enough about Toby Keith. Let me tell you another guy here. He is a representative out of Missouri. Now, folks, I want you to stop what you're doing. I want you to pay attention to this soundbite. 5 minutes long. I want you to listen to this. This guy gets it. He understands. He has a full concept here of what the Second Amendment is about. Okay, you ready? Everybody ready? Let me see a show of hands. Just stop what you're doing. Come inside. Sit down. Relax. And pay close attention to what this guy says. You'll be hearing clips of this periodically. I think I'm going to put something together out of this. There you go.
It's really good to be here. It's really good to see all of you here in support of overriding the governor's veto on such an important monumental bill. Everybody hear me all right?
Yeah.
Okay, good. You know, when we talk about issues like the Second Amendment, a lot of people look at it in just within the context of guns, whether or not you're for or against guns. But really, the issue is so much deeper than that. And I would say that we really need to go all the way back to some of the more important principles, such as property rights. Okay? We need to go back to some deeper principles, such as the principles of self-ownership. You know, our liberty hinges on on the question of whether or not you believe you own yourself or whether or not you believe somebody else owns you. It's a fundamental principle of liberty. It doesn't matter where you are in the world, what kind of government you have. If you want to strive for liberty, you have to come to a conclusion on this particular issue, this particular matter. Now, I would argue that we own ourselves. I believe that our founding fathers were right when they wrote in the Declaration that all men are created equal and that we're endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights. Among these, I like how they said, among these rights, they didn't list all of our rights, they just said, among these rights are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Now, here's the reason we have government at all. Here's the whole purpose behind American government. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. So my job description is a state representative. We have law enforcement here and in other parts of the state. Their job is law enforcement. Our job is, I spent several years in the United States Marine Corps as an infantryman. My job as a Marine was the same job that it really was the same job that I have right here as a state representative. Our job as members of the government, as operators or agents of the government, our job is to help keep people free. That's it. That's all we have to do. It's really a very simple job description. But oftentimes we get politicians and bureaucrats who try to expound on their job description. And before too long, we have this mission creep. And next thing you know, they believe that they're in government for an entirely different reason. But really the reason that we have government, the whole reason we have government is just to help keep people free. It's to make sure that we identify that people own themselves. And it's not up to the government to decide what liberties you get and what liberties you don't get. Because as John Adams called him, the great legislator of the universe was the one that told us what liberties we have. And the most that government can do, the most that we can do for each other, is protect each other's liberty because it's mutually beneficial. So I believe that when we look at issues like the Second Amendment, the fact that we have a right to life, just by virtue of having two hands that I can ball up into fists to protect myself from anybody who would try to do my body harm, I have a right to defend myself. And our founding fathers were wise enough, they had enough forethought, to give us what we would call a vested right, where they wrote in the Constitution, in the Second Amendment, that we have a right to keep and bear arms. And I think that our founding fathers were very wise, and one of them said this, somebody much smarter than me said that a government that does not trust its citizens with arms is itself unworthy of trust. And so when we see these particular issues rise to the surface in the legislature, it's very important that we pay attention to who it is that believes you have a right to keep and bear arms, because that might, it might highlight some people that themselves might be unworthy of trust. I believe that to my core. But you know, the Second Amendment says that the federal government shall not deprive the people of the right or infringe on the people's rights to keep and bear arms, right? What the Second Amendment does, legally speaking, what the Second Amendment does is it removes from the federal government any jurisdiction over firearms regulation. It is the Second Amendment, really, it's quite literally a prohibition placed on our federal government, okay? Now, do I believe that, you know, people try to say this, oh, you just want everybody walking around carrying a bazooka. You figured me out. That's what I'm going for. No, but I spent several years in the Marine Corps. And are there areas where the government, maybe at the state level, should just step in just to make sure that there's checks and balances? You know, those things are to be debated maybe, but only at the state level, not coming from the federal government, not coming from executive orders by our president. And I think that it's incumbent on our governor and our legislature and all members of our state government to make sure that they're standing up for a certain degree of sovereignty that the Constitution reserves to the people of Missouri. I'm excited to go in here to vote to override this bill, and a lot of times politicians look for cover whenever they vote for yes and no. They want to go in, they want to vote the right way, but sometimes they just look for political cover because they want to vote the right way, but they just want to make sure that they, you know, have the right thing to say to people. Our cover to override this bill is the United States Constitution. That's it. My name's Paul Kerbman. Thank you very much for letting me be here today. We greatly appreciate it.
That young man right there has got his poop in a group. I mean, he's savvy. I'm gonna save that. That is a great speech. And you know, I think that he really believes this from his heart, because he didn't even have a set of notes up there. He went and talked that all that without missing a beat, right off the top of his head. And I think that was an awesome, awesome little speech. I wish I could do so well when I talk about these things. But Anyway, those are two individuals that seem to be absolutely opposed to opposed to each other as far as gun rights go. Here's a I love it when a plan comes together. We have a cop here from San Francisco. And apparently he thought he was all that in a bag of chips, and he's, let's see here, hang on a minute. Let me read the thing out of it before I get started on commentary here. San Francisco sheriff's deputy accidentally discharged a non-duty weapon. You know, you got to pay attention to this because it's going to be funny. A baby Glock inside of the Hall of Justice on Wednesday morning, apparently while trying to demonstrate the proper use of the weapon to a colleague. The round narrowly missed the fellow deputy, but no one was injured. San Francisco Sheriff's Department spokeswoman said the discharge occurred before the court started and was under investigation. Let me get down here a little ways. We can skip some of this. Sources say that Rhonda Gaines, a 20-plus year veteran, brought the gun to work, and that Sotero Santos accidentally fired it. The police spokeswoman here, Eileen Hurst, would not confirm either identities, but said the person who fired the weapon is receiving a one-on-one refresher on firearms training, as is the deputy who brought the weapon to the courthouse. So what happened? What'd she do wrong? She may not have been at fault for bringing it to the courthouse, but she was at fault for handing a loaded weapon to someone else. If you're not standing on the range, there's exceptions to this. Of course, you're Secret Service and Delta and your highest trained people. Now they wouldn't just be handing it to you. Hey, check this out. Let me show you how to use it. No, it would be for some mission specific thing if they were to be doing that inside like that. But now here's the clincher right here. Sources told NBC Bay Area that Gaines brought the handgun, a .22 caliber baby Glock. To work and was apparently not familiar with how it operated. She handed it to Santos and asked him about its use. So she's not only familiar about how it operated, she's not even familiar with safety procedures, period. Here's a loaded gun. Show me how to use it while we're standing here in the courthouse. The second deputy pointed the weapon at the first deputy and, apparently unaware that the weapon was loaded, pulled the trigger. So both of them are idiots. The round missed her, piercing an equipment storage cabinet before lodging in the office wall. Now, for starters, you can look at the cabinet on this thing. There's no way that's a .22 caliber hole. It was at least a 9, possibly a 40. And the other thing is there is no such thing as a .22 caliber baby Glock. But how many of the universal safe gun handling rules were ignored there? Unloaded, finger on the trigger, not point towards something you don't want to destroy, and all of that. So anyway, I guess, and I don't think there's probably any department that, probably none that even allows, certainly not anyone that issues a .22 caliber handgun. There may be some that allow you to carry a .22 caliber backup, I don't know. Probably is. But you probably shouldn't be toting it around out there and not knowing how to use it to begin with. Oh, funny stuff. All right, let's go. You know, it's odd to me that all of these people I know that the firearms training from the average police agency department is probably not, obviously not top notch. But, you know, don't you think they could spend maybe a little more time, maybe emphasize just a little bit about safety alone? You know, hitting the target out there is way secondary to not killing your fellow officers or your wife or your canine partner or somebody that's not even a part of anything or shooting a hole in the filing cabinet or whatever the case may be. It looks like they could spend a little more time and have a little more supervision on safety alone. Okay, we've got this down. You seem to be handling it pretty well. Let's go out now and see if you can hit something. Odd to me. So, yeah, Yakima Glock, the Glock 22 is a 40. But it was not a 22 caliber baby Glock. There is no Glock 22 that's a baby Glock. That would be the Glock 27 if it was a 40 caliber. So I don't know if they have any idea what in the world they're talking about there. And it could have been one of the ISSC guns, but they're not baby either. I don't remember if they're full size or mid size, but they're definitely not the babies. So I don't know. And Doc, you know, I get it. I understand that they have limited training budgets. I understand that completely. A lot of that budget is, and you'll hear him crying about it, is on ammunition. So the budget is kind of not damaged terribly by spending an extra couple of hours on safety for a whole class out there and maybe having a, you're right. You hear it all the time, Doc. And having a refresher, whether you qualify or not, I don't care. The, helped a, what was the Department of Transportation officer? And they did actually shoot out to 50 yards and he had trouble with that. Okay. I get that. You know, not everybody shoots at longer distance. I understand. But the most of the shootings are probably happening between 3 and 6, you know, 5, 10 yards, something like that. And the average cop, I think, can probably make those hits at least half the time, I would think. But that still... let me rephrase that. That means to me that they could probably sacrifice a couple of hours of shooting time during their initial training and certainly during their qualification, ever how often they do it, and spend it on safety. How many of these stories do we hear time and time and time again? Guys, I've been doing this show for 10 years. No, 11 years. And I can't even begin to guess how many stories I've talked about that were from law enforcement at some level and strictly through negligence, not following proper safety procedures. Oh, well. The Doc, that's pretty good, man. Hit planet Earth 100% of the time. That's not bad. And Longslide is right. You know, a lot of this, for the time that they have, and I'm not speaking for every agency. I don't know what all they do, but I do know that they have a little bit of off time while they're on the clock, at least once a week. And I have met a few cops that took their job and their life and their duty very, very seriously. And they spent their own money practicing, you know, or going to civilian training courses. We had some, you know, I've trained some of them up in Farmington. And those are the people that I don't worry about. Those are the ones that I would actively seek out to be part of the, you know, part of the team there. But some of these other guys, I guess they just feel like that they are all that in a bag of chips. I guess they feel like they're safe, they're comfortable, they're I don't know. I just don't get it. I sure see a lot of it. Alrighty, well, let's see here. Let me go. Yeah, long slide. You should practice your draw and your reholster at least once, 365 days a year. No doubt about it. Let's see. Let me go over here and look at my. The heck did I do with it? Well, that's just great. Fine and dandy. Well, I'll bring it back up here. I was going to look at our training schedule here real quick while we've got a couple of minutes left. We're trying to, Edge of the Woods and I are trying to put together a really cool class, and I'm not going to spill the beans on it yet, but if we manage to get that done, it will be, I don't know if it'll be one of a kind, but it'll be one of damn few in the nation, and I think it's going to be a neat deal. All right, here we go. Let's see what I got coming up here. That one's already gone, 23rd April. I've got an advanced CCW class coming up. 28 April through 1 May, private training up north. Designated rifleman class, 6th and 7th of May. And there's going to be some other classes in May and probably the beginning of June, but I haven't got them scheduled yet. The next one jumps right up to the LFA Arms Expo, 17th, 18th, and 19th of June. And the immediately following weekend, 24th, 25th, and 26th of June, will be Personal Defense Handgun 3, complete with night shoot. And it's a lot of fun. It's a good class. And for those of you that are in Arizona or somewhere within, this is the designated rifleman class. It's a two-day class. Put this code in when you go to sign up at the go to our online store. Just go to southwestshootingauthority.com. Over on the left-hand side, scroll down to online store. You'll find the designated rifleman class. You want to put in this code. DT567, Delta Tango 567, and you'll get $55 off of that class. If you happen to be going to the one up in Yakima, up in Washington, that's associated with the Arms Expo, you'll want to put the code K1LFA, Kilo 1 Lima Foxtrot Alpha, and you'll get $100 off of that class. So, all right. Well, we've just about had all the fun we can stand here, so I think we're going to start easing towards the door. And we're still a little unsure of what Amy wants to do on Mondays. So we're going to see. There may be some changes more than what I expected here before long. So, but by next Monday, something's going to change. So we'll let you know what it is. All right. I'm going to get out of here. We'll see you all tomorrow night. Everything should be on schedule and working fine for tomorrow evening and be back to normal for a little while. Talk to you later. Good night. Talk to you later. Good night.
This has been The Shooting Bench with Cope Reynolds of Southwest Shooting Authority.